Another episode of Fratello on Air. I'm Mike Stockton, coming to you from London, England.
And I'm Balázs Renzi, coming to you from Karlsruhe, Germany.
Man.
Like we never left.
Yeah, sorry it's been a few weeks here to everyone, but watches and wonders occurred. I was in Florida. I was the one who was pretty tied up most of the time. Balázs did make gallant effort to come together, and unfortunately work got in the way of things over on the East Coast, and amazingly you didn't want to record at midnight. So
yeah, it was I had a lot of long nights, which I must admit they, you know, kind of took a toll on me the next day, and then I promised I'm not going to do it, and guess what, the next day I found myself,
you ended up doing it again, right?
Yep. So I came back Friday night, and I've been kind of, at least I tried to relax and sleep, but instead I ended up doing some other stuff, and around like 3-4 p.m. it kind of hits me. It's almost like you have jet lag, and I'll become extremely tired. So I guess that's just like, you know, a lot of running around. Not a lot of sleep. I did a 9 kilometer this morning.
I saw that.
Yeah.
Well done.
Thank you. I was I'm gearing up for 2 events, one in May, one in June. One of these company running events that usually occur in Germany. One is about 5, one is a 9 kilometer run. So a colleague of mine and me would usually do this once a week, or try to do it twice a week to kind of not to be the last. That's the idea. So yeah, beginning of May and beginning of June, I have these 2 things. So and I still need to unpack my suitcase and yeah, the usual stuff.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I got back. Got to the house 6 hours ago. We were supposed to get here. We're recording this on a Sunday. We were supposed to get here yesterday. And we were flying out of Fort Lauderdale through Atlanta back to London. And the initial flight got pushed back 2 hours, which meant we would have landed when our London flight was taking off. So it was great. I think it was like what the heck movie was it? Was it Home Alone or something where she's like trying to go get a Tommy Boy. Did you ever see Tommy Boy?
Oh, with
Chris Farley.
Chris Farley, yeah. And David Spade, yeah.
Yeah. Where they were trying to get on the plane, and then they ultimately ended up dressing like flight attendants.
Yeah.
But like the whatever the person was offering them was like nowhere near where they needed to go. And that was what it was like on Friday at Fort Lauderdale Airport, because everybody was trying to get back to London because it's the end of the 2-week break. And Delta automatically, you would have liked this, rebooked us to a flight leaving. We were standing there, leaving from like an hour from where, you know, when we were standing there to go to Boston. And I was like, oh, okay. Then Boston to London, no problem. The problem was the Boston flight was 24 hours later. It would have like gone to a hotel and like sat there until 4 p.m., you know, the next day. So
anyhow,
we just decided to stay at my parents' place another night and enjoy the pool and then go out directly out of Miami. So Saturday night. So
was it a mayhem at Miami airport?
You know, it wasn't nearly as bad as I would have thought. And lo and behold, Balázs, because I was standing there at Miami airport and saw the that shining Lufthansa tail, two planes down from the Virgin Atlantic plane. And I remarked to my wife, the boarding procedure getting on the Virgin flight was like a breath of fresh air compared to what it used to be like to get on that Lufthansa plane, where mm-hmm. everybody's just pushing and jostling and fighting to get on to this plane where you're going to be sitting there for the next 10 hours anyway. So,
yeah.
But no, it was okay there. What was pretty crazy this morning was Heathrow. So, but what wasn't bad, like from a passport perspective, but once you got out of the luggage area, like mayhem. So,
but you have, at least you have those smart gates.
Yeah. But I mean, like after you got your luggage and went through customs, like just in the whole like hall area, it was just filled with people. Incredible. Like these people, these like huge, you know, those like huge, carts they get and throw all the luggage on there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's
really, everywhere. Huh?
Yeah. Old terminal, you know, people just blocking everything. So I was, we had a car rented to pick us up, and that was the right move. So,
anyhow. Yeah, for some reason, it's also difficult to get to the car at Heathrow because you have to like leave the hall, go through this elevator up to like, I don't know, the fourth floor and something like that. And then this car picks you up on the left. But if it's another company, you have to go all the way to the right, and then they can't come directly to the door. You have to go like a bit out. So, yeah, it's tricky sometimes, I know.
Clearly a situation where they built this airport and demand has outgrown the place, right?
So yeah, it's not what, yeah, probably it was not, it's not now what it used to be back then, but well, first world problems, I guess.
Yeah.
It's so better to talk about that and the weather. I got this comment from someone today. This week, I don't know who, but somebody said, I can't remember who said, you know, I skipped the first 10 minutes because you guys always talk about the weather and I'm not interested in that because I don't live in that part of the world. But yeah, fair enough. I'm going to talk about the weather.
Beautiful. Even though
it was really nice in Germany today.
Beautiful here too.
Yeah, so much with the weather.
So, So look, today, surprise, surprise, we're going to talk about watches and wonders and quite frankly, how disappointed we were in the releases in general this year. I think that tone has been somewhat consistent on sites, but I can tell you, Balazs, that this is like the second or third year in a row where I've gone to Florida over Easter, and I always have like a pang of envy / jealousy of not being there in Geneva. And more and more, you know, we see the releases before the event, and you basically see everything within like one or two days. And mm-hmm. I felt literally none of that this year. It was so bad. I don't know what happened. It was like almost like the industry's tired of itself or something. I don't know what to say, but we'll get into it. I didn't mean to, but
yeah.
It's just like a big sad trombone. It was strange. Really strange.
Yeah.
And I don't think we've got any other real news today, but
No sneaker talk.
No, I've been checking for the Agassiz. Nothing's coming up yet. Releasing like a lot of ugly Kobe shoes. So
oh yeah. They had like the camouflage and
Python and
rap. Yeah.
Not my type of shoe, but see what else. If I watched anything. Oh, I watched Oppenheimer. Did you watch that?
Oh, yeah. Actually, two times even.
Okay. Yeah, I liked it.
Did you like my people in it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All over the place there.
Yeah, they made him the villain. At least one of them out of the two.
Yeah.
But it was, I must admit, it's not my favorite Nolan movie.
I agree with you.
Others. I think his best is the Batman, trilogy, right? Like he directed three of those.
Yeah, I really enjoyed those too.
So those are really nice. I like Tenet for whatever reason. I still don't understand it, but I like Tenet. Dunkirk was not my movie, I must admit. It was okay, but whatever. And Oppenheimer was, I watched it when it came out last year in IMAX.
Okay.
And that was nice, but it was incredibly long.
Yeah, and I don't even know if that's really like a IMAX. There wasn't that much action, you know?
Yeah, but I think they shot the movie at IMAX camera, so it was intended, least some parts, right? Because technically, without getting into the details, because I'm sure some of you guys have not seen it, it's basically like watching three movies at once. Three different stories.
Like plot lines, yeah.
Yes, and also the colors are different. The aspect ratio is different, I think. So it's an interesting movie. And I mean, you know, Oscars were very gracious to Oppenheimer and Nolan. They won like, I don't know, 7-8
too
Oscars.
Too gracious, to be honest with you. But
well, that's another story, yes. But
there wasn't, this year wasn't a great, great movie year. Like I watched Napoleon on the plane as well.
I still haven't watched that. I think it's on Netflix.
Yeah, Apple.
Or Apple, yeah. Yeah.
Watchable, but the thing is, I mean, with that person, you could make a movie about some of the individual events that occurred during his reign, you know? So yeah. it was watchable though. I don't know. I thought on both accounts I'd heard some people being very bored, and I wasn't bored with either of them. So
the thing I don't quite like about these movies, although I know that's just show business, is that oftentimes they don't really have anything to do with the actual, you know, historical facts, which I understand you have to make it quick and make it interesting, blah, blah, blah. But I haven't seen the movie, but I read some articles in which people were complaining about the fact that it was not only inaccurate, it was just basically a fantasy.
Yeah.
Which I felt was a bit like, meh. You do a movie, I understand, again, you use certain, you know, creative liberty with certain things, but I mean, just, yeah. Why make a movie about Napoleon when the things that is depicted in the movie is not what really happened?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what, you know, Tarantino does sometimes with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, right? And also with Inglourious Basterds and things like that.
But they were meant to be that, so.
But they were meant to be, yeah. That's a bit of a
fantasy, yeah.
Yeah, or a satire, if you will.
Yeah.
So I haven't. I watched, finished Bosch, the whole 8 seasons of Bosch. And then I watched 2 seasons of Bosch Legacy.
Yep.
Which is quite good. I talked to a guy, I wouldn't call him a friend, but somebody who was a detective for many years. And he said from a detective's point of view, it was pretty accurate. So he said that's as close as you can get to how really law enforcement works, which is, I think it's a high praise for a TV show, right?
Yeah. And by the way, the author of those books, I think Michael Connolly, I think is his name. He's got a podcast. And I don't know if it's been updated recently, but I think there are 2 seasons and you're always looking at podcasts, and it's a true crime podcast and of course focused in LA. And
oh, cool. What's the name of the, do you know?
I can Google it. Look it up in the background here. But He Murder Book, by the way, is the name. So it's a 30-year-old Hollywood killing. He researches heavily for Bosch with LAPD. So I think he does a pretty good job. But anyhow, Murder Book, it's worth listening to.
Yeah, I'll save it. And also the actor, I haven't I watched an interview with him.
Titus Welliver.
Yeah, I think his name is Titus Welliver. And he talks about, I don't know which podcast it was. I think it was on YouTube, but I guess it's also a podcast anyways. First of all, the tattoos in the show are his.
Yeah, they're real.
Which is really cool. Yeah. I found it really cool.
Probably a Rolex too.
Yeah. Well, see, the Rolex it looked funny, and I read some Reddit threads that it may be a prop because it really looks like a big sub. It's not like a sea dweller, but some people said it's not a Rolex, but in certain scenes you can clearly see the claps and it is a Rolex. So yeah, I'd love to ask him about that. Now that we know the story behind Magnum's GMT. And what I didn't know and I'll try to find that YouTube link and I'll send it to you so you can put it in the show notes or the article, is that his dad, Neil Velliver, was a very famous modern painter, artist. Hmm. And he told stories how his dad, and I must admit, I have never heard his name before. It's probably just me being uneducated in art, and that's fine.
I don't know him either.
So apparently, Titus said this in this interview that he would, in the 70s and 80s, when his father was active, he met like everybody came to their house. He said he had just dinners when he would go home from school and there was like John Lennon and Muhammad Ali sitting at the table having dinner with his parents. Or he's into jazz in the movie, right? In the TV show. And it's because he met all these jazz legends of the 60s and 70s. Also were friends of his dad. So he basically met everybody, all these iconic artists and, you know, musicians and stuff because of his dad. So pretty cool upbringing, if you ask me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he seems like, I don't know, his character seems like relatively similar to how he is in real life.
Yeah, I think so. And you Google him, you see a bunch of pictures when he's like bald and he's got like a huge beard or he's like dyed hairs. He's got all these different, characters, or he's just like a very kind of hipstery guy.
Just doesn't look like he gives much of a rip about anything.
Yeah. He looks like a great actor. Yeah. And it's a good movie or a TV show. And the third season, I think, is coming. Bosch Legacy season 3.
Yep.
So I'm looking forward to that. And I'm trying to finish Winning Time. You know, there's only 2 seasons, sadly. Mm. They're not going to renew it for a third season. You know, the story about the Lakers dynasty. Yep. I watched the first season back in 2022, I think, when it came out. And then I haven't watched the second season, and now yesterday I started, and it's super entertaining. I mean, I can imagine it's probably, you know, a lot of money to recreate those scenes and the jerseys and the cars and everything. But I was pretty cool. I was watching the first 2 episodes, and I saw some watches, and they were quite accurate. You know, sometimes you have these, especially watches. I mean, what TV shows from the 80s, and you can see that the watch is new, or it's like
doesn't
not fitting to the scene. And those were I mean, a lot of date dates. I mean, you and I think we had one evening when I was just basically going through every picture on Getty Images about Pat Riley, and was just sending you image after image. And I mean, it's good research, and the man was and still is a style icon as far as I'm concerned.
Great
choice of watches and Armani suits.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, funny enough, and I said we didn't really have any news, but my trip to Florida, I noticed an overwhelming number of Cartier Santos XLs on the wrists of people.
A very classy choice.
They were everywhere, Balazs. Absolutely everywhere.
So you say that the Cartier is the new gold day-date for Floridians, South Floridians?
Well, I landed in New York and then flew down to Florida, which, okay, those 2 places are the same, basically. But I saw, like, one guy had, and who knows if it was real or not, but it was a completely iced out Santos XL. Do they make one of those, like the whole case and the bracelet, or is that fake?
Oh, I wouldn't know that. I'm not the audience for that.
Yeah, I don't know, but it was saw that, and just saw a number like on the plane, so I'm just walking around. It's really kind of the it watch right now down there. So
what was your it watch throughout your stay?
I brought a number of things like tanks and stuff, like the little old ones that I've been wearing, but I wear my Kala Travel a lot. So I wore it on the plane, both directions, by the way. And coming back to our episode, I grazed the crystal today on the armrest and need to polish it out a little bit.
Yeah, it's going to be easy. 10 minutes but, with the
there you go,
right? Poly watch.
So
wear your watches.
Wear your watches, but there's the peril of bringing it on a plane. And I, you know, I was so out of it on that flight that it was, I think, when I reached down between the fuselage and the seat to grab the seatbelt that had fallen down, you know, I think I did it. So
I was thinking of you the other day, Friday. I was coming out of the parking garage, and it's an underground garage in Geneva where we parked the car, and I saw an Alpine parking.
It's, nice.
It's the most amazing place. Honestly, when you go to Geneva, guys, if you like cars, go to the train station. In front of the train station, there's huge garage, this underground garage. Take the elevator down and just walk around. You see
like a car show, huh?
It's not only that, you see a lot of Bentaygas because, you know, Bentley, I mean, anyways, Geneva is another, we can get into that, but I think Geneva is not as fancy as people think it is. There are areas, of course, and you see the expensive cars, but there's also a lot of dingy places in Geneva, but especially like around train stations, which
two blocks back.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. And then you walk down three blocks and there's the Beau Rivage with like, you know, super expensive rooms and everything is there. Ritz-Carlton, Four Seasons, et cetera, et cetera. But you go down to this garage and those, the funny thing is, these are not cars that are stashed there, right? It's, I'm sure there are garages where all the you know, the Middle Eastern royalties and whoever fly over, they store their cars there and they drive them. But these are really cars that people drive around Geneva. Most of them don't even have a Swiss license plate or not from a Geneva canton license plate. But you see all kinds of Defenders, which obviously I always love to check them out, 90s, 110s. You see really everything, McLarens sometimes, Lotus, which I think is a funny car, Alpines, not to mention the RSs and the AMGs and things like that. So it's really a very interesting place. So if you're top tip, if you're ever in Geneva, go down to this underground garage and if you're lucky, you see some amazing cars there.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. Yeah, Every time I go to Florida, and you probably saw this when you're in Miami, the cars just get more ridiculous there.
Oh yeah,
I saw a lot of Rolls Royce convertibles. It was crazy.
Well, that's what you do there.
Yeah, but I always like playing the game. You know, who's driving this thing and guessing in my head. And I mean, I saw everything driving these types of cars. Like usually used to be in Florida, it was always old people. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not so much the case anymore. So
$100,000 cars, everybody got them.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
But literally everything's $100,000 now there. So Escalade is like 120.
Yeah, well, that song came out, what, late 90s, early 2000s? Like 100,000 was very different than 100,000 now. I think it's more like $300,000 cars. Everybody got them.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, I when I was there the last time, I had a lot of, I use Uber Black a lot just because, I don't know, it's comfortable. I like it. And I always get these upgrades from Uber because I use it a lot, right? And I love the big ones, you know, the Suburbans, Denalis, the
Navigators,
yeah, all that stuff. But sometimes I got the Teslas, and I must admit I'm not the biggest fan of Tesla in terms of quality. But that's like the normal car, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's Geneva is also can be a car show from time to time.
Absolutely.
Interesting city.
So, sir, Handgelenk's controller, why don't you kick us off?
Okay, so there's a bit of a story behind this. I reviewed B and R bands for Watch Strap Review back in probably 2020, 2021. I can't remember. You can find it on Fratello. And this is like a family-owned company, a business out of Brooklyn, New York. B&R stands for Barry and Ron. It's a father and son. Barry's the son, Ron's the father. And when I was in New York, Barry reached out to me and he said, oh, he's working on a watch brand and he'd like to meet me. And maybe I may have mentioned this in a previous episode. I'm not sure. So I was in Brooklyn anyways to have dinner with some friends. And after that, we went over to a bar and Barry came and he showed me some watches. And, you know, we've been talking ever since. And he wanted to send me a few for a review. The watch is not out yet. And if you go onto the website, it's Tuul Watches, T-U-U-L Watches. The website is still empty. It says coming soon. But if you go into their Instagram page, which, yes, you guessed it, Tuul Watches, T-U-U-L Watches, you see 45 posts of the watches. And I invite you, Mike, to check out the Instagram now, because then you see what I'm talking about.
Yep.
As the name suggests, it's a Tuul Watch design, very Dirty Dozen inspired. Yeah. So in this sense, there is nothing interesting in that, right? Because it's like a Dirty Dozen, but there's more to that than the looks. And I'm not going to get into the details because I'm going to put them in the article. I have the black dial version.
Okay.
Which is blasted, and I have a bronze version with the green dial. You can see them one amongst the latest images. And so I got them while I was in Geneva, and I wore them for a few days and took the watch to the fair and, you know, showed it to a few people just to see what they think. And the watch is going to get released in a month. Well, I'm not sure exactly what Barry says, probably end of April, like early May or something like that. So the article will be out by then. But so now I'm kind of test driving it.
Quartz?
No, nice. No. Mechanical. You can see also amongst the images, there's a picture of the movement. It's a SW261-1. So it's a Sellita inside. It's manual wind.
Nice.
Yeah. 400 hours of power reserve, 31 joules, et cetera. So it's a very, very cool, very decent watch. It comes in a NATO strap and then something like a Pelican case style box. As I said, I'll tell about it more in the article, but that's what I'm wearing on and off since last week, or well, this week, right? Still on Sunday.
How big is it, by the way?
I can actually tell you because I have my caliper here. So it's 37.9. The thickness is 11.3. And the lug tip to lug tip is 45.8.
Sounds good.
A very comfortable. Yeah, not too big, not too small. You know, because it's steel, it's kind of heavy, or, well, it has a good wrist presence, so to speak. It's not heavy, heavy, but, you know, you can feel it. There's going to be a bunch of dial and case options. And I kind of like the black best. I like black better than the black dial and steel sandblasted steel case better than the green dial and bronze case. But that's what's on the wrist today and probably also tomorrow.
Nice. So I am wearing one of the watches that I brought with me and wore a little bit while I was down there in Florida. My 1016 Explorer.
Nice.
Yeah. So I hadn't worn it in quite a while, and I don't know. I just sort of thought, you know, that and my Kala Traver are really a nice 1-2 punch. I find.
They went vintage, huh?
Yeah, and they're kind of simple and just well designed watches, and so I've been wearing that today.
Which year is that from? Do you know?
1989. So this is the last year they made.
Late, that. Yeah. I'm about to say, yeah. You know, I'm not really the biggest Explorer fan, especially not the new ones. We talked about this, and I know you really love yours, and you wear it quite often. We also talked about that, but the 1016 is really something that I, especially the early ones, the vintage ones. I really enjoy those. I think they really look lovely in the 60s and 70s, and of course they're pretty expensive these days.
Yeah, they are, and I think it's hard to find one with a good case, right? Because they're don't yeah. have like really strong chamfers, and therefore, kind of like a Datejust, they tend to show a lot of wear, and so you see them in all sorts of different conditions. And of course, you know, it also you need to pay attention to getting the right dial for the right year and all that good stuff. So, but it's a nice watch, and I do think that the domed crystal that they used on these also adds a lot to it. Whereas the Datejust, of course, with their Cyclops had a more beveled crystal, and there's just something about a nice rounded acrylic crystal and the kind of the optics that it brings to the dial. So
yeah, it's in the same category for me as the Rail Masters or the those vintage Omega
Rancheros,
Rail Masters, right, like that kind of stuff. Yeah. And while I think the Datejust doesn't look good without the Cyclops, as you said, like let's say a GMT, a vintage GMT looks brilliant, and with a true dome, it doesn't work for the Datejust. But for this, because there's no date, it's just a totally different look. Although the size is the same, kind of the shape of the case is very similar to the Datejust, if not the same. I'm not sure about that, to be honest. But there, yeah. The fact that they don't have the date, and it kind of gives this clean look to the dial. I like it quite a lot. And the 369 obviously is an iconic dial design.
Just a cool watch. So let's shift to the place where
my Magic 1016's happens.
Headquarters is Geneva. Mm-hmm. So yeah, as I kind of started the rant early, we've been seeing this for a little while now with watch brands doing a lot of just different color variants on an existing case, and I felt like this year was really magnified. I know that this past year was really tough for the watch industry. And it's odd, right? Because you either get brands that sort of double down and try to shake it up and do something to spark some interest, or you get those that either they can't afford to, or they're just sort of laying back, right? And it doesn't mean that there weren't some new releases. And I will mention, and I hope you do too, some of your favorite things. But by and large, very underwhelming. It seemed very kind of blah, and just not overly inspiring. And I, since you were there, you were on the ground, talk to me. What was it like?
Yeah, I think some online media outlets painted a very different picture. Because they loved everything. Obviously, I follow the competition, and they seem to, really love each and every brand they saw. But hey, those brands paid for the trip, and of course you need to love them. And there's nothing wrong with with most of them. You don't need to say anything bad, because really nothing bad happened. But I also agree with you that let's just say that the lineup wasn't really inspiring. I think maybe it could also be the COVID effect, because that the watches that you see in 2024 are not coming from 2023, right? So they may have
designed them several years ago.
Yeah, so they may have suffered that COVID, post-COVID kind of shutdown, where those watches that were designed or started to be developed that time kind of became these models. I don't know. What I can tell is since Watches and Wonders, I think it's 2021 was the first time I know 2022 was the first time I was there. In 2021, it was mostly digital. This has been the busiest year. I've seen tons and tons of people.
It's interesting.
Really, a lot of people. A lot of people from the Asian markets. Then again, okay. I don't know if it's Japan or China or whatever, but yeah, I have a few friends from Japanese media. print and otherwise. And I've met all of them. I met a lot of our friends from the European media, print and otherwise. Some of them from the US, although they were, they seemed to kind of moved in a group. So very hard to penetrate that group. Not that I wanted to, but hey, that's another story. So it was very nice to see those people and these fellow journalists who we spent days and days and days and nights at Basel or back in the day. So a lot of people, a lot of brands. So 50 brands at Watches and Wonders, and probably another 50, if not more, in and around the city. The place for Geneva Watch Days is the Beau Rivage. And for Watches and Wonders, the Beau Rivage also becomes the place for the brands that are not at the Pal Expo. For those of you who don't know, the Pal Expo is this huge expo building outside of Geneva Airport. And so that's where the Watches and Wonders booths are built up. But then all the other brands, most of them usually go to the city. Bulgari, for example, every year. So LVMH brands, Zenith, TAG Heuer, and Hublot, they're at the fair, but Bulgari never goes to Watches and Wonders. So for Watches and Wonders in April, they go to the President Wilson. And for Geneva Watch Days, they pick another hotel. So they were there. And as I said, the Beau Rivage had some of the smaller brands and micro brands and up and comings and auto lingerie and stuff. And then, of course, a lot of, you know, maisons use their own offices in Geneva or boutiques in Geneva to showcase their latest and greatest. Breitling, for example, they have something going at the boutique and around the boutique. So, so much for the atmosphere. When it comes to the watches, I have not seen everything. I had the luxury of picking and choosing the stuff I want to see. Of course, I walked around, I talked to people, I followed stuff on Instagram, and I went to a bunch of meetings. The one thing I saw in terms of trends is obviously green, which is not a new thing. But I think green is the new blue now, and blue used to be the new black. We may have talked about this again a while ago, so I saw a lot of that stuff happening. A lot of precious metal, a lot of smaller watches, which I quite liked. I had a meeting with Hublot, and they showed me a 38-millimeter unisex watch, which is, I mean, you saw the usual, you know, big and thick and blah, 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 and sapphire case and all that good stuff that Hublot does. But I was surprised to see the 38 watches, and I was surprised how well they fit, how, you know, and I have a bigger wrist. So they're very interesting. I like that. Because if I associate Hublot with anything, that's not small watches.
Yeah, no, it was a good move. That watch was, I think, a good move from them.
Yeah, I think it's a prime example of that. When Hublot is reducing, then you know, then that's really a strong trend, which is again not a new trend. That's been happening for the past few years. I think micro brands and smaller brands were faster to adapt and kind of jump on the bandwagon, if you want to call it that. Bigger brands, obviously, they turn very, very slowly. I'm not going to use an example of a ship again, because then I get burned in the comments like last time. But that was good stuff. I really like the TAG Skipper in the gold case.
Okay.
Not the biggest fan of the Panda, because it's not really a Panda in a sense that the dial is not white. It's like silvery. So while I like the watch, that the color iteration wasn't my favorite, but the Skipper is a beautiful watch size-wise. The colors, the material, really, it stood out for me.
I wrote that watch up, and obviously I didn't see it, but for whatever reason, I like it in gold more than steel by far.
Me too.
I think it just works. It just works with the colors, and something really nice about it. Did a nice job with that watch, for sure.
Yeah, me too. I liked, I saw the steel was there as well, but the gold, and I'm not really a gold guy, but I really like that watch with the gold case. Another thing, I mean, I saw some of the Zenith stuff. They had the triple, was it the triple date chronograph with the green dial?
Yeah.
Boutique edition. Beautiful.
So here's a question on that, because we had those at the headquarters a couple months ago. RJ's comment was the thickness of the movement. So the case back kind of made this like huge gap. You could stick a pinky between the case back and the, you know, where the lugs come down, kind of when you have it on the wrist. Did you notice that?
No. On a bracelet or on a strap?
I think it was on a bracelet.
Yeah, I didn't like it on a bracelet. I liked it on a strap.
Okay.
First, I got it on a strap, a green leather strap, and then they gave me the bracelet. On the bracelet, it's a bit, it's not my favorite look. Let's just put it this way: on the strap, it looks absolutely brilliant. It's a beautiful watch. It's deep, very deep green, with a deep leather strap. Great size, great dial design, just a wonderful watch. I know it's, you know, there's the Panda and there's the Defy divers and all that stuff, but this was my favorite from Zenith, absolutely.
Yeah, another, the divers for me were not. I don't know. I'll have to see them, but they did not jump off the page to me. Really, I was, for a brand that has been without a diver for a long time, I was expecting something a little bit different. The retro Defy is kind of cool, but this modern diver wasn't. Yeah, didn't love it.
Yeah, they had the retro, the re-edition, which according to the lovely people at Zenith is exactly the same as the vintage model was in terms of size and everything else like that. Well, that's a very specific design, right? It's like a love it or hate it type of design. That was okay, but the divers are nice. They're obviously big and obviously, you know, like they're sports models. I like the I like them as well, especially the blue, orange, and steel. That looked really nice. But yeah, my favorite was the boutique edition. And then another green watch was the, and I posted that as well on Instagram, the Double Time Zone Grand Seiko.
Oh, okay.
It's don't ask me for the reference cause I don't know, but you guys can find it. It's a high beat automatic GMT where you have, an inner GMT scale and then you have a GMT bezel. So you can basically set the time to three time zones. So your local time and GMT-1 and GMT-2.
So I'll ask you for about a couple of watches that I liked, at least from a distance here. So I wrote up two different sector dial LU Chopards. And
I've not been to Chopard.
Okay.
I haven't seen them.
So they came out with like a green XPS, and then they came out with a silver-dialed Qualité Fleurier. And both of them looked really nice. They're both in steel here again. The XPS is in green, so there you go. And a little bit large, 40, whereas the silver-dialed piece, I think, is like 39. But both look good, and I think those got nearly universal praise in the comments section, and people brought it up again and kind of the what was your favorite watch of the show recap. So I think they did a nice job. I also like this new Parmigiani Torique. Did you see that by chance?
No.
So that's kind of a neat looking watch. 40, unfortunately, here again, big, 40 and a half mils. I think 38, 39 would have been neat for a very, plain is not the right word because the dial is anything but it's a you know, a two-hander with a sub-second style manual wind, only in platinum or gold at this stage. So very expensive, like 45, 50 grand, but I thought a really nice looking watch. So those two were highlights. And then I think I told you, at the time I hadn't seen that Parmigiani yet, but the other highlight for me that you wrote up were the four new Nevada F77s.
Yes. Yeah. So that's basically not a new model, but a new, well, technically two things, right? One is that there are two models or two versions that are titanium now. And then there are another two dial colors, new colors in the steel case. So you have the lapis, lazuli, and the Venturi. Those are just quote unquote just two new dial colors for the steel case. And then what was the third one?
There's a meteorite.
The meteorite titanium was a new dial in titanium, and then they also had like a different color of the usual kind of tapestry like dial that they had on the original model. Those are sweet, like very, very cool watches.
Patisserie.
There you go.
So those watches, and I know I've asked you before because you did the write-up when they first came out just with their normal dials. But
yes.
And I feel like I saw them at London in London. No, I did not see them. But they wear really nicely, right?
Yeah, they're I mean, you know, when I did the write-up, I think there was a lot of users commenting about the fact that it's an integrated bracelet watch and it's a copy. And we talked about that article, and I mentioned that everything in the 70s was a copy of something when it comes to integrated bracelets. So get over that. You don't have to like that watch. You don't have to buy that watch. Just scroll on. It's a great watch, a nice size. It's not too, it's an automatic, but it's not too thick. The integrated bracelet kind of makes it look, I guess, smaller because it just looks like the whole watch with the bracelet is just like one thing. If this makes sense, like it feels more like a bracelet than an actual timepiece.
Sure.
And the new dials, and I sent you some of my photos from the article. The article's out, I think this week it came out. Of all those three, I like the meteorite the best. I think that's the nicest of the three dials. And all three of those dials are super interesting. But the meteorite, because it's a titanium, so it's a much lighter watch. In the sun, that dial just really pops. The aventurine is a bit too dark. It looks beautiful from certain, you know, in the right light in certain angles. The lapis is it's nice, it's beautiful. It's just not something that I see myself, you know, wearing a lot.
That's the one that draws me in, but I can get your point about the meteorite and the titanium. I always question whether I'd wear titanium in the long run, but man, all three to me are just cool. And the prices are, you can't argue with them, you know, $1,300-$1,400 or something. It's like really, really nice watches.
I mean, if you look at the, look up my article and you look at the pictures, you can see that I have like a 7.5 inch wrist and the watches look kind of almost small on my wrist. Mm-hmm. Which means that it's just a great size. It's, again, it's not too big, it's not too small. Because of the integrated bracelet, the lugs are pretty short. And then the bracelet already kind of starts at the rim of the bezel. So that's what I said, what I meant, that visually they look a bit smaller. I really liked it. And I think they were pretty popular amongst the people who saw them at the Beau Rivage.
Okay. So now let's shift to kind of before we get to some stuff that I'll pick on. Tudor.
Yes.
Talk to me about the two big releases they had.
So I saw the pink one. Christoph.
Well, that wasn't the one I was going to go to, but go ahead.
No. But Christoph was wearing the pink one, and so he gave his to me. And I was surprised because I wasn't a fan of the watch when I saw it on Instagram and then it came out. And then, you know, I tried it on and I'm still not a fan of the color because it's just not my color, but it's very different in real life is what I want to say. So if you kind of indecisive, I suggest you go and check it out in the AD because it's really a very different pink than the one you see in the pictures.
So are they limited or are you going to be able to get them?
I'm not sure, to be honest.
Okay.
I think, honestly, even if they're limited, I don't think you're going to have a problem with, you know, finding them.
Okay.
But you mean the GMT or the gold one?
Well, no. The two that I, the GMT and the 41 millimeter Black Bay in black without any faux lume.
Oh, yeah. So the GMT, I tried it on. I'm gonna send you some of my photos, but I'm sure there's gonna be some better ones in the Fratello media library. I like the GMT. It's a Coke, right? It's a black and red bezel, where the top part is black, the bottom part is red, but the twist is that the numbers are gold or yellow. I would rather call them gold. And it's a Master Chronometer GMT. On the rubber strap, it feels more comfortable than on the bracelet. I think on the bracelet, it feels much more substantial. But in both cases, on both bracelet and strap, it looks incredibly good. And then I also took a few shots and I tried on the black one. Feels a bit larger than the GMT, obviously. It looks a bit larger, but it's a sweet watch. I kind of reminds me of the Pelagos a little bit, but you see the pictures. But I'm team GMT, and I said this last year. I think last year they had the white one, right? The white dial, and I was pleasantly surprised how cool that was and still is. And I like the GMT, this one as well. If I had to choose between the two, I would choose the third one, which I sent you. And that's the gold.
The all gold, yeah.
The all gold for 30,000, 190 something grams of gold. Obviously, I'm joking. I'm not joking. That is a watch like that, but it's not my favorite. I'm team GMT. But okay. Both of them are lovely. And to be fair, I don't remember in the past few years going to Tudor and saying, it's okay. You know, everything that I see that Christoph shows me, everything is something that I can see myself wearing.
Yeah, I think they did a nice job. And, you know, if you step back between this all black 41 millimeter Black Bay and the blue Black Bay 58, you do really have two, call it Tudor Submariner options now that are not like overly retro with like Fotina or something on it. So they kind of have given people what they want.
Yeah. Which is great.
Yeah. And I think these will be a big hit. They really will be. And, you know, clearly with the 39 millimeter GMT shows they can do it. And we can probably expect some more from that in the future.
So, yeah, absolutely.
No, that was good. I guess before I transition to some big question marks, the Rolex GMT Master with like the black and sort of gray bezel, I think, I don't know, there were some like cranky comments about this, whatever. I would just say on that watch, my view on it is it's fine. There's nothing like offensive about it in any way. It sort of replaces the old black bezel ceramic GMT that quietly went away several years ago. So I think that's fine. Go ahead.
Yeah. It is whatever, right?
Yeah.
it's fine. It's nothing special. I think Rolex was talking about underwhelming, was pretty underwhelming, but we used to that in a sense that they never really do anything major, major, major. They might tweak things here and there. They might change the bezel, like you said, from black to black and gray. They might put on a display case back, or, you know, change certain sizes, or come out with an absolutely ridiculous gold diver.
Well, let's stop right there, because sorry, that watch is like, it's kind of silly, isn't it?
I mean, I just talked about the Tudor. That's, you know, 30,200 grams of gold. Nobody's going to probably wear that and go diving.
Yeah.
Same with the Deep Sea. The problem with those watches, I think it's more like the we can do it effect, you know, like we can do it, so we did it.
Yeah.
But you know where those watches will end up.
Yeah,
on the wrists of who and where.
Yeah.
Not on divers, saturation divers or otherwise. Now, do they need to? That's another question. I guess not, or maybe yes. I think we'll see a lot of those in Miami, Dubai, and all those places.
Celebrity photos and
yeah, and people who want to
show off.
Show their wealth or lack thereof.
Yeah. So then I move on to Cartier.
Hmm.
And Balazs, I don't understand these Santos that have the movement running in the wrong direction. I don't get it. Did you see these?
So I went to the Cartier photo shoot, and I had not the touch and feel, and then I had a bunch of watches in a box in front of me. Mind you, as a side note, you remember, and you and I were not the Kappas and the Leibovitzes when it comes to photography, sadly. But we can hold our own. But you remember back in Baselworld again, it was just ridiculous to take photos because the lights are just so bad, so, so bad. You could not take a decent photo of a watch. And a lot of the brands stepped their game up on this. So you see a lot of photo rooms, like Seiko had like a completely pitch black room with like these photo tents. What's the other brand? Zenith, the photo rooms had like a white ceiling.
Oh, nice.
Which was basically a light. So you can see the photos I sent you. They're iPhone photos. But there was none of that silly spotlights and LEDs and stuff like that. And Cartier had a room, a huge room at that, with big photo lamps, all the watches, and a lot of accessories. So like, you know, like shawls and bracelets and bags and little trinkets and things like that. So you could like style the photos like you would, you know, like you would see it on Instagram. So that was cool. That was actually quite cool.
So did you see the backwards running Santos?
But yeah. So back to the Santos. I did see that. I don't get it. there were some nicer watches. Let's just put it this way. You know, like you could really, I mean, in that box, it again had like 30, 40 watches, like everything. And because it was a photo session, you didn't really have somebody explaining the models, just everything there. And you can just pick whatever you want. And so I focused on other stuff, not necessarily on that one. Cartier is huge, man. It's very, very, very popular these days, right? Like you see a lot of their models and people, you know, talking about them. The Privé, for example, was, I think, pretty much the star of the show, at least for a lot of people.
Tortue, how do you say it?
Yeah, Privé.
Yeah, good luck, right? No, I agree. Those are nice.
That's
very nice.
That's like a monopusher chronograph. I like the fact that it doesn't look like a Cartier in the sense that it's not tank. It's kind of a tonal shaped watch, but it just looks pure class. And a lot of people posted that. There's a lot of good comments about that. But Cartier is one of those brands where you have a lot of, maybe not the most skilled journalists cover them.
I saw an article on a competitor site, friendly competitor site, where there was raving about the Cartier Tank Mini. And it was on the wrist of a fairly well-known website founder. And I thought to myself, this article can't be real, can it?
I mean, and that's the least of your problems. I think, and this is just as a side note again, I don't want to sound old and dusty and sour because I'm absolutely not. You know me, trust me. These types of coverages, and Katya, I hope you're listening, it's not going to do anything good for your brand. And that's all I'm going to say about that before I get carried away.
I agree.
That's my point. I talked to a very well respected, maybe not known, but definitely respected in the industry and in the watch journalist circles, German watch journalist. I'm not going to say the name, but it doesn't really matter. And he said that he sees that the prices are getting more and more ridiculous. He says that in previous years, you could see like a bit of an incline and then it was okay. But now prices are just skyrocketing and it's not doing anything good for the industry. And we agreed that on the other hand, now again, you see that the coverage and the focus from those brands is moving away from journalists and into the lifestyle people, the fashion people and the influencers.
Yeah.
And Cartier is very heavy in that segment.
Sure.
And so we were kind of debating whether that's a good move for the industry, like raising the prices. Because if you raise the price, right, this is the logic, I guess, what he had and when we talked about this. If you raise the price, you need to explain why you're doing it. And there's a number of ways to explain it, whether that's technology behind, whether that's research and development, whether that's the movement, materials, the brand, etc. But you need to explain it. Now, these guys who don't even know if that caliber is automatic or manual, much less what's the name or the reference number, they're not going to explain that to their audience. Now, of course, you could argue that that audience doesn't care about that stuff. But I also don't think that audience buys that stuff for the most part.
I think they do very briefly when it's hot, right?
Maybe.
And then it goes away. So you need to have good underlying bones for foundations for these products to make them last, right? And yeah, I don't think it works to sell these products on a hype cycle. I don't, because they're not made for a hype cycle. They're made to be in the catalog for multiple years, unless they're just some sort of limited thing. But I'm with you.
And I hope I'm not wrong, but I think that vibe or that wave of quote unquote journalists will be out in about 5 years. I don't wish that, I don't want anybody out of the industry, but they need to step their game up, man. Because it's some of the people I talk to is just ridiculous. They have absolutely no clue. Other than, it looks good. It matches my jacket or my shoes. Really? This is how I'm going to sell a $25,000 gold Cartier? Matches your shoes? Okay. I guess.
Yeah.
I'm not that audience, for sure. Maybe that's the problem. Again, I don't want to sound, old or dusty, but that's just, I think there should be a healthy mix between the two.
Well, there was a definite lean into that type of fashion stuff, and some of the writing, I agree with you, is not great. Speaking of somewhat confusing, and not that we really cover Braymont heavily, but did you see their new watches?
I did. I stopped by at the booth, so they had a new section, instead of one entrances, there were like two main entrances this time. And when you went through the main entrance from last year was the second entrance, and that was a new main entrance. And when you went through there you saw some of the smaller brands like Nomos and stuff, and then you had to take the escalator down, and then we were in the big area, in the main area with like Lange and Wascher and blah blah blah. So that's where Braymont was. I mean, what do you think? Because I'm already crucifying myself in this podcast. I want to.
So the new what is it? Supermarine got. Well, let's be very honest. Everything that they came out with got a lot of had a lot of venom thrown at it online. Yeah. And so here's the thing. I think the dive watch, like the new Supermarine, looks fine. It's kind of like a weird hodgepodge of things. Like it's got like a lump on the left side of the case, which reminds me of like an IWC. It's got like a Rulo bracelet. I gotta say, I mean, I need to see it in person, but their new logo and everything, and it's the
Stone Island logo.
Yeah. It's like huge on the dial. It's doesn't look expensive to me. Mm-hmm.
You know what somebody said? Okay. This looks like a Hamilton.
Yeah, there's a bit of that. And then this Terra Nova series is, well, that's very Hamilton. I mean, it's, I don't know, man. And they've got, who's the person running them now?
Davide Cerato, who was with HYT, Montblanc, and before that, Tudor.
Yeah, so obviously they're expecting big things from him, and I don't know if they got it, honestly. I mean, again, going to have to see these in person, but you saw them in person, so I don't want to get you in trouble, but what did you think?
Yeah, so I missed the old Braymont. And this is a high praise from me.
Well, I think they had something unique with their mid cases and everything, right? And they're gone now, right?
Yeah, and the Altitude, for example, you remember that with the double crown? That was a sweet watch, and with the that was the old Braymont. These two, the Supermarine and the Terra Nova. The Supermarine is okay. I think it's not my favorite either, but I can see that. Then again, if you want like a two tone, it's like 6.5. I think the cheapest is like 3.8 or
Toledo, right?
Yeah.
So yeah,
it's a 40mm case. It's not too big.
I mean, there's some things like the case size and all. I'm totally good with. I think like the movement department, they need to do more there on a three hand. Again, I don't love the logo. Or at least the real estate it takes up on the dial. I don't know. I don't know. I'm. To me, it feels like. Let's be honest. When Kern joined Breitling, the first models that came out under him were okay, but. You know, things have changed since then. So maybe this is the first step for them, and we'll just have to see what comes. I mean, but not my favorite.
I think once you know the designer, you can see the resemblance between previous models from previous brands.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Very, very, you know, very obvious certain things, the big numerals, the globes, and things like that. So maybe that's his signature. I don't know. But the Terra Nova, I hated the big numerals. I think they don't look good. And the case shape is kind of like this cushion, kind of 70s, but it isn't. It really, somebody said, and I was at the booth, and somebody, I don't know who actually, it was two guys standing next to me, And one of them, come here, check him out. And the guy came in and said, they look like Hamilton. That was his first thing. So, like, yeah, you're right, buddy. Even and then we had a chuckle and walked away.
Even a Seiko or something. I don't know. So then the one to me that was really quite disappointing was Patek.
The Canadian tuxedo watch?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's a dire move of a super luxurious brand, and you want to be cool and hip and trendy, I guess. And I'm not sure if it's working.
Well, I just didn't see anything there that I thought was, you know, that like really very just variants, you know, and nothing truly new and interesting.
They had a great design, like the Ellipse. That's a new design, right? Oh, wait.
Yeah, just a very odd year. So maybe,
and again, I mean, the watches are beautiful, right? They're like beautifully made. I like the 5236, the platinum one with the Salmon dial. You know, it's a beautiful, super elegant timepiece. I even love the Nautiluses, but this denim thing. I mean, the Nautilus is the one Nautilus. But the denim thing was, I felt it's a bit too much. It almost looks like a third party strap, you know, like somebody made like a custom strap. And then you had the Aquanaut with the blue, similar to the denim, like this light blue. That's cool. You know, the Ellipse is cool, but it's not a new design. It's a very 80s, 70s, 80s thing. There is no problem there when it comes to, you know, the quality of the timepiece. They're beautifully made, really beautiful. And it's a Patek, so, you know, people will buy it. But my favorite was the 5236, the platinum, the P.
Yeah, it's okay.
But then it's also nothing special. It's like a, you know, like a moon phase with like a triple date.
Yeah. I don't know. Nothing there for me, sadly. I had hopes on some new Calatrava models, some simple pieces, but nothing really.
No, I mean, they did that a few years ago, right? So I think that line is sleeping now. It may come back soonish. But remember, the new Calatravas are also a bit
Longine.
Well, not only that, but they were like just a bit too big and kind of too. Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
they're not as elegant anymore.
No, exactly. Yeah, they kind of wanted to. I guess they wanted to be like elegant and sporty at the same time, but it just doesn't work like that. So I guess it's and.
So let's put a bow on this one, and I'm going to ask you to end it here. What's your favorite piece that was released?
I need to think, because it's definitely not Rolex and it's not Patek. Probably the one that I see myself wearing and enjoying is, I give you three. It's the Skipper.
Okay.
It's the green boutique edition Zenith. Mm-hmm. And the dual time zone, the three time zone Grand Cycle.
Okay.
Those are my favorites. I think they really look. And then, I mean, two out of three are vintage inspired, right? So there you go. That's me. I also love the I love the new Tellurium from Space One. That's not at Watches and Wonders, right? I went to the workshop in Paris just 2 weeks ago, I think. I saw how those watches are made. They explained me the whole story, and there's going to be an article about that soon-ish. Just need to finish it. Finish it, meaning writing. I did the photos and stuff. I like the Space One. I did the review for the Space One that you and I liked. The first one, I mean, the I have the carbon case Destro version. So yep. left-handed. It's already given to our head honcho Nacho, no pun intended. So because of that, I went to see that. That was a super cool watch, a great complication. I'm trying to think of other brands outside. Oh, what I really love though is Amida is making a return.
Yeah.
And this is, again, a heavily vintage-inspired watch, the 70s. It's not for everybody. Mike, it's not going to be cheap. but it's if you do like a re-edition of a quirky watch, that's how you should do it.
Yeah.
That's nice. The guys were super nice. We had a short, like a 30-minute meeting, but they showed me the watches. And, you know, I had a few. I don't know if you have you ever had any of those? Amidas?
I've never owned, but I've tried one on you. Owned.
Yeah, yeah. So I've owned like three or four, maybe even five, and I like them. I think it's a super funky watch. I mean, MBNF used it as inspiration, and you know the story. And so I was very excited to see that new model, and I got exactly what I expected.
Nice.
Those are going to be cool as well. Yeah, basically that's it.
Nice. Yeah, for me, I stand by the LU Chopard models, the two-sector dials, the green piece, the XPS, and the Qualité Fleurier. And then the Navanas. Those are the watches for me. And
you need one for a review, like a hands-on.
I should do. Yeah.
Yeah. You can make that happen. Yeah. Just tell me which one you need.
Lapis, baby.
There we go.
So.
You get one.
Well, sir. Goodbye, Watches and Wonders 2024.
Do better next year.
Do better. And with that, Mike is out.
Balazs is out as well.